In Session with Dr. Farid Holakwi.
Good afternoon. Welcome to In Session. I'm your host, Dr. Farid Holakwi, and I'll be with you for the next 2 hours here on Radio Hamra. Studio number to call in, 310-441-0555. You can follow me on Twitter or Instagram or like my page on Facebook to get updates on the show or suggest topics or books for the program. And the shows are uploaded at the end of each week to my SoundCloud page and podcast on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. Again, our studio number, 310-441-0555. I'll start the show today with some very tragic news. I wasn't even sure how to talk about it or what to discuss, but I felt that it was worth mentioning and to share some thoughts on it. In California, just this past week, a young boy, 15-year-old Ryan Gaynor, was killed by the police. And Ryan was a child with autism, and I'm still learning more about the story. That's also why I wanted to be aware of how much I share about it, because I would have to read more and look into it more. There's apparently body cam footage from the police officers that, of course, would give more of a picture of what happened. But the bottom line is a 15-year-old boy should not be killed, whatever the circumstances were. That should not have to happen. And so from what I've read, he was, this is also in California, not too far away from Los Angeles here. The police had been to their home a few times. In this incident, he was being aggressive, as the whoever called was saying there was battery and property damage, and he was actively assaulting family members. So it was a aggressive or violent situation. However, when the police responded, Ryan apparently approached one of the officers with a gardening tool, but a sharp gardening tool. And apparently they gave some kind of warning at first, saying, hey, get back, you're going to get shot. But apparently things continued, and eventually they emptied or fired a few rounds at him and then responded there. And then he was taken to a hospital, but eventually he died from the gunshot wounds. And so it's a just tragic story. One that unfortunately is not too uncommon, hearing it in the news here in the United States. I was actually talking to someone who's not from the U.S., and they were just shocked when I was starting the story saying this 15-year-old boy with autism, and then I said was shot by the police. They just couldn't believe it, that this happens, that the police kill people in the United States. I mean, of course, it can happen anywhere, but it does happen here far more than other places. So, of course, there's many elements to look at here. Just again, overall, there's a tragedy more than anything else. We're also, you know, mental health is there, and how we deal with individuals who have mental health issues or neurodivergent, who might think or act a bit differently than most people, but nonetheless deserve to have their humanity respected and, of course, their lives preserved and to be taken care of. Ryan was also a black child, and so that's often another element, or likely an element here as well, that for many people is leading to outrage and anger, that this is something that we have seen in the United States, the police treating black individuals differently than others, and for them to be subject to much more, much worse treatment, and also much more likely to be fatally wounded or killed by the police. And so, looking at the mental health side of things, people are, you know, we sometimes think of, even I say, you know, this term neurodivergent. What does that mean? Well, you know, when people are slightly different, sometimes people include people with ADHD, with autism, even autism itself. There's different names that have been used at some time. Asperger's just till recently was commonly used, but now it's become all an autism spectrum. But people are, as much as we are similar in many ways, we're also different. And unfortunately, we often don't take care of people who are different or make sure we're taking as much care of them as we should. And people with mental illness or mental health concerns are definitely part of that group. Also, taking care of people in the sense of having mental health services available for these kids, also adults, but the families, is so critical, but something that we are very bad at here in the United States. You just see how difficult it is when I talk to families with, it might not even be autism, it might be other mental health concerns, how hard it is for them to find therapists and to find a psychiatrist and find other types of treatment, or even to know what's out there or what would be helpful for them. It's such a struggle to do that. And that's another way that we don't take care of people well enough here in the United States. I could speak more clearly about the United States or a bit more informed about the United States. I'm sure if you're listening in other countries, you might have your own similar experience, or I hope you don't, that you feel that people are taken care of. But it's definitely something we see here, that people fall through the cracks when we're trying to make sure everyone's okay, or I don't even think we do make sure everyone is okay. That's somewhere that I think the United States is behind, is recognizing that we are responsible to all the citizens and make sure everyone is okay. So when we have individuals with mental health concerns, we see how they're not dealt with very well at all. Also, people with just physical health and medical concerns, we don't take care of people. And that's another thing, that if you talk to people in other countries at times and tell them how people here, families might go bankrupt trying to pay medical bills, it's just shocking for people that that is a reality, or that people's lives end more quickly than they should because they couldn't afford treatments that would have helped them and saved their lives, or decreased their pain and all sorts of things. So it's something that I grapple with. You know, it's easy to say this system is bad and, you know, here's how it's bad, but of course, how do you fix it? That is tough. But that's just one general area when you look at the United States that I think we're so not aware of or don't think enough about, is taking care of everyone. You also look at how many people are homeless or dealing with poverty in the United States, a country that is so wealthy. That is not okay. We should not accept that. Again, something that in many other countries you won't see, but you do see here. Here in Los Angeles, sadly, we have a lot of homeless individuals, unhoused individuals, and a lot of them are children. And I really have a hard time with this, because when you hear people talking about individuals experiencing homelessness, there's a lot of blaming that happens, blaming them for their situation and blaming them that it's their fault or that they're not working hard enough or trying hard enough. But and any situation is very complex. Anything like this, a big problem, is going to involve so many different factors, and there's so many different experiences. But I have spoken to, worked with, talked to many people who are dealing with homelessness or have dealt with homelessness, and it wasn't any of those things. It's just a lot of factors play into that. But even if you do think still people are to be blamed, if that's what they're experiencing, what do we say for the children? Are they in any way to be blamed for being homeless, or should they have to go through that experience? And it's really shocking, again, a country with so much wealth, to have children who are dealing with these types of circumstances. It's really, really heartbreaking. And so I connect this with the Ryan Gaynor tragedy, in that I think the mindset of the United States and how we deal with general issues is not focused enough on taking care of those, or making sure we're taking care of everyone and putting that attention in. And this is something we have to be very mindful of, because it might not be you right now or anyone you know, but it likely will be, because there are so many different groups of people that experience discrimination or don't experience getting enough of the resources that they need. Also, for example, individuals with disabilities. This has been a huge struggle. And sometimes when you hear about when laws were passed, sometimes it's in the 1980s or 90s, that certain laws that you would assume would have been around for a long time finally were passed. And so We see how much people have been suffering and how much people have been forgotten and invisible to the general public and also the general concern and also the resources that are available. So I was very heartbroken. I just learned of the news yesterday of this young boy, 15 years old, and you can see a video that I saw also circulating of him saying something like, "Hope everyone has a beautiful day," or saying something very sweet. And so it's heartbreaking to learn that he died, he was killed, whatever he was going through, it did not need to end in his death. There has to be other ways of dealing with these things. And that's another very American type of problem. Even this concept of shoot to kill, the police, that's usually their orders. I'm definitely not an expert on these things, but you hear this very often when these situations come up. Well, the orders are, if you open fire, you shoot to kill, which I can understand at one level. Okay, if someone has a gun, maybe that's what seems to make sense, because if you fire, they are going to fire back or other people will be at risk. But in general, in this case, for example, when a boy has a gardening tool, and again, I haven't seen the body cam footage, but he's attacking, are there other ways to immobilize or stop the situation rather than death being the place we go to, that's the solution? And I think the police officers, of course, have responsibility, but it's also the bigger system of how, again, we're taking care of people, how we're responding to a situation. There are often better ways of community type of policing that might not replace policing, but also could be part of the structures that would help when we respond to situations. How do we de-escalate, or how do we prevent tragedies happening? And just, this was one of those situations where, again, I don't know enough to say what should have been done specifically, but it does seem likely that this young boy did not need to die, that he should still be alive, even if he was hurt in the process or something happened. Even a family member apparently said, "Why didn't you use a taser to, again, immobilize rather than kill him?" He probably would have sustained some injuries from even a taser, but again, he would still be alive and would likely recover from those injuries. And so it was just very sad for me, and another reminder of how much work has to be done in taking care of people better, but also talking about mental health struggles, mental health issues, that some people have autism or different, again, using that term, neurodivergent, might be not the typical or what you're used to experiencing or we think a quote-unquote normal person should be like. And that phrase itself, that word normal, is very stigmatizing, but what you might be used to seeing. But that doesn't mean we shouldn't become more aware of understanding them, being sensitive to what they're going through, and making sure they're okay, making sure they're taken care of, making sure those families have more resources to deal with the situation and to help this boy, but also help the family to all be okay and take care of themselves better. So I was just very sad when I saw the news and seeing pictures of this this young boy who is sadly no longer with us. And a reminder that we have to be looking at the system. This incident should definitely be investigated, looked at, and hopefully justice is served in whatever way that can happen. But I also think it's important to look at the bigger picture, and for his life not to be lost in vain, that we don't forget what else is related to this tragedy happening. The systems that are in place and the systems that are not working and the resources that are not there to take care of other people. And I hope we will have more of that mindset, that taking care of people is more important than sometimes the other things that we can get focused on. All right, let's go to a commercial break. We'll be right back. Welcome back. Let's go to a caller. Radio Hamra, you're on the air.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. Sure. I'm calling about my niece. I give you a little bit background about the family and about her. I'm in my 50s. I have two older sisters. They are married kids. And my younger brother, He's 50. He's not very younger than me. And my niece is my brother's daughter. Mm-hmm. His only child. And my mom. We all live here. When she born, she had a problem, a lung problem. Is a dextrocardio. So she had three surgery for about 2 months in the hospital. And after that, they put a tube. She couldn't eat from mouth, so they sent her from tube go directly to her stomach. So until 3 years old, that they took the tube, everything, and she had a speech therapy. Everything goes back to normal.
Okay.
And then she was 5 years old. Her mom planned for divorce, so they got divorced, but it was really bad divorce. Like her mom called police out of the blue, so, and her brother was in the house, so they took my brother, the police took my brother, but when they were taking him, she called my niece. She was 5 years old, and she said, say goodbye to your dad because you're never going to see him again. And that was the time that, you know, the police was there and taking. The divorce takes about a year. First, she had it. So for a couple of months, my brother couldn't see her. Then the first time that he saw her, his daughter, oh my God, my niece was like, you couldn't take her from my brother. You know, even my brother couldn't go to the bathroom. That's how she was scared. Are you there?
Yes, yes, I'm listening.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry.
No, no.
Only I want to make sure.
Yeah.
So, then it was the custody comes to 50-50. And then in 2018, it was somebody came from her mom's side. It was their friend. They came and they say, they're abusing her, like they're locking in the room. And it was like a horrible, horrible stories that he was telling about what they're doing with my niece. So my brother go to judge. So anyway, they gave full custody to my brother. But all this happened when
so,
she was like
so they
five
gave,
until
yeah the full custody. So did the judge think the accusations were fake? That's why they gave.
No, the accusation was not fake. So no. Yes, what they accusing my brother. So yes, that was that proved that it was fake. So that the first court. They gave 50-50.
No, okay, got it. Yeah, so I just wanted, because you said they accused him and then the judge gave him full custody. I was trying to understand how that would play. I guess there's some steps in between. That's not so important. I don't want to get into all the details. I'm sure, obviously, a lot's going to happen in the course of their divorce. So there's definitely a messy...
Right now, my brother has full custody.
And how old is your niece?
Right now, it's 12.
12, okay.
From 2 years ago, I start having her in my house. As I said, I'm single, never been married. I don't have kids. Mm-hmm. So from last 2 years, I have her weekends with me from here over there when she's break. So she stay with me. I try to have, you know, role model as a female role model for her. I can tell the problem we have with her, and then I say my question.
Okay.
The problem that we have, she's nervous. She was biting her nail a lot, but in last year is much better. The main problem we have, she has a hard time to sleep, especially by herself in the room. So we take her to therapy, and she goes for a couple of months, almost a year for therapy. She was better, but still is not gone. She fight as much as she can to not sleep. She doesn't like to sleep. And, you know, as much as she can, she want to come to my room to sleep. So that's the main problem. She has a short attention span. Mm-hmm. She barely show her emotion, and she never cries. So like I barely see her to cry. Sometimes she's lying. She is stubborn, so bad. She doesn't like to talk about her mom, her situation, nothing. So she doesn't care about her grades. Mm-hmm. She doesn't do, I don't know, it looks like she really forgot, but the basic stuff, like in the morning when you wake up, you have to wash your hands, your face, your teeth. If I don't tell her, she doesn't do it. She says she forgot. Or at night you have to, you know, brush your teeth, so she doesn't do that.
And what's then, what is her current relationship or interaction with her mom?
Nothing.
At all.
She hasn't seen, at all.
I mean, is the mom trying to see her, or the mom is...
No.
So is the mom...
No, it was, something that I think that is just so bad that... after the full custody, so a few times they say my brother agreed that, you know, she can see, but she didn't show up. They, you know, they plan to meet in some place, public place. She come, she see her, and she didn't come. So and no, she. She didn't even ask, you know, email, how's she doing, nothing.
Is she living, is she in the same city or she moved away?
She is in the same city, okay. She married. So, okay. Yeah, she's close. Until like 5 months ago, she never seen my niece at all. Until 5 months ago, out of the blue, she go lunchtime to see her, and school, even they had to judge, you know, everything. So they knew that she cannot see without supervision. So they let her to see her. She gave a cell phone, and it was a letter. And after the, you know, she texts her that, you know, don't, who do you see in the family? Don't trust anyone. Everything, I want to see you, but your dad doesn't let me. Everything, blame my brother. Mm-hmm. That's what she was doing during, you know, the 50-50 time. So she was poisoning her with, like, we are all bad. Her dad is bad. So everything. So... you know, it was after a few years, one visit, she gave the cell phone, which my brother find out in a few days. So he took the phone, but of course she was so mad and upset about the situation that why she cannot have the phone.
Mm-hmm. And is there, and just a different topic, but you mentioned the health issues. Is there any issue anymore, or everything has been resolved?
No, as I said, when she was three, everything was normal.
Now that's great. I'm happy to hear that. Although what she went through still very likely is impacting her mental health going forward, because although you might not have conscious memory of it, that type of constant stress and surgeries, and then also being away from the parents that much, especially the first few months, is going to leave an impact that usually is going to be related to things like anxiety or feeling safe or secure, like you're saying, with sleep. So based on what you're telling me there, this young girl has been through a lot, you know, a lot of traumas. Sometimes we'll talk about capital T traumas, like these really severe ones, and then the lowercase t, but she has both. Like, there's just a lot of trauma, also just constant instability in her experience growing up, and then this situation with her mom, this her being absent and then coming back in these ways that are probably more hurtful than anything. It's just, you know, it's not a surprise that her anxiety is very, very severe. Now, is there ADHD there too when you talk about her not doing things, or is there more anxiety? Because that can also affect the attention span. That's not clear to me, but it's understandable that this young girl is dealing with a lot, and we have to be, of course, aware of that when we interact with her and what we expect from her. It's not that we have low expectations from her, because we do want to encourage her to, you know, be the best for herself, but we do recognize that she's been through a lot, and things are probably going to be more challenging for her than most kids her age in a lot of different ways. So, it's tough. You know, we have to be aware of that, how much she's been through and how she's dealing with that. But the main issue was the sleep. Is that what you are most concerned about?
No. Is first question. One, I want to know that how should I be for her? Like, I don't know. I should be like a aunt, or should be like, how should I act? So I don't know exactly. I'm her aunt right now. That's how I do, and we are very close. Thankfully, she loves me so, and she see that, you know, how much, because I don't have a kid, so I see her as my daughter. Mm-hmm. But I want to know that first, how should I act with her? That's one of my questions. Second is, she doesn't care about, as I said, anything. Like, her grade is not good. So, and she says that, I don't care. I don't care about the school. The only thing she wants, so, is to have fun. Mm-hmm. Going to piano, I don't care. So, nothing. She doesn't care about anything. And the third one is, like, is it real that she doesn't remember that, like, even doing the basic stuff? And I have to tell her, or my brother, we have to tell her every day the same. What we have to do.
Well, yeah.
So
these are.
And they sleep, that, of course. Whole question I have.
Well, sure. Let's start with that first one. You're saying you want to know how to act with her. And I get it that you said something, or I want to get it better, something about, okay, I'm her aunt, but should I act differently? I mean, are you saying, should I become like a mother figure, or what do you mean by how should I act with her?
Yes, that's what I'm...
Okay. Well, I mean, I think you know, of course, what does that mean to be her aunt? It could, some people have an aunt they see, you know, once every 6 months. Some people have an aunt they see regularly or are close with. So I think you can be a very close aunt and a very loving aunt, but you're not going to be her mom or become her mom, and nothing will replace her mom or any feelings of abandonment or rejection she might have from that. And so we have to be aware of that we can't replace that primary figure for her. But you know, you're going to be her aunt at the end of the day and maybe a very close one, but making sure you give her as much love as she wants from you. But, you know, the relationship can't become something more than that. You know, you're just going to be her aunt, but possibly a very close one. But I want to get, even for you, what does that mean? Like the distinction of what you're wondering if you should do or not do.
Like discipline her.
I don't think so. I think usually discipline has to be, you know, within the primary home. But even what kind of things are you wondering about disciplining her?
You know, when she lied, I had a red line for her that she cannot lie to me. Mm-hmm. So, and she did a few times, and I catch her, and I said, you know, I do everything for you. Usually I plan one stuff, whatever she wants to buy. So in the limit, so, but I do whatever she wants me to, her to have fun in the weekend. But the line is like a red line for me. So no.
Well, what
no.
does red line mean?
That I get upset, and when I said I get upset, is like if she doesn't listen to me, if she lied to me, I don't do what she wants.
Well,
we're not
yeah.
gonna have fun.
Okay, but her not listening to you, I don't know if you know. This is a common one with even parents, but she's not necessarily supposed to listen to you or listen to anyone, like do what they want. And lying is definitely not a good thing. The reason why I asked you about the red line, I understand it's not something we want to encourage our kids or our family members, anyone to do. But usually when people use a term like red line or if you use it with her, it almost implies if you do this, then I go, you know, something ends or a relationship even ends or something happens. And so with her, and you know, we're at a commercial break, we're definitely going to explore a lot more of what to do, because we're dealing with, as I was saying, a child who I don't want to think of someone as fragile as in the sense of like just a victim, because she's, I'm sure, very strong and has had to be to go through all these things, but a child who has been through a lot of things related to abandonment, rejection, instability, people being there than not being there. So even how you talk to her about these things, I think is important. It's, you know, it can be good to, we talk about values and what's important and what's not good to do and those things. But another thing, and we'll talk about this after the break, is you're not going to punish someone into telling the truth or into loving honesty and, you know, thinking lying is bad. But let's talk, you know, there's a lot going on here clearly, and you obviously love your niece based on what you told me, and that you're calling me to try to help, you know, be the best you can be for her. So let's talk some more after the break to explore more of these issues that you discussed, okay?
Sure.
All right.
Thank you.
Sure. We'll be right back. Welcome back. Before the break, we were with a caller. Let's go back to them now.
Hello.
Hi. All right.
Yes.
So, yeah, you shared a few...
Sorry, I have a hard time to hear you. Is it any way?
Oh, I'm not sure. So before, how is it right now?
Okay.
It's about the same?
A little bit better. Thank
okay.
you.
Yeah, I'm not sure what it might be, because we through the speakers it's coming through clear, but you know, sometimes with the phones people get different level of volume. Before the break we were talking, you mentioned three and then a fourth area, and that first one, so now you know you clarified a bit more as far as your role, wondering how much to impose discipline, punishment, or how to try to help her with these issues, but or what would it mean to help her. And I was sharing some thoughts very briefly on in general, to punish someone likely won't get them to change something, like if they're lying, because, you know, especially when we look at why people lie, one of the main reasons is they're afraid to tell the truth, or something about saying the truth feels so bad or doesn't feel good that makes them go in another direction. Can you give me an example of something, like you say I've caught her in some lies, can you give me an example of something you've caught her lying about?
It was her friend's birthday, and I asked her, what do you want to buy? So, I'm sorry, it was a Christmas gift she mm-hmm. wanted to give to her friend. So, we bought the gift. She asked for makeup. I said, no, I'm not going to buy makeup, but anything else, we buy. So, she asked for something else. I bought it. Then when we came home, she said, I have to pack it. So she packed and she put, she had a $70 money. So she put the money in her package. So when I was at night, after she sleep, I was looking her purse and I saw that the money is not there.
I missed what was the $70? I missed that part.
She put it in her...
No, but where was it from? That was a gift. She was supposed to give $70 to someone, or...
We already bought the gift for her friend, but I didn't buy the makeup.
Okay.
So she put the... She had $70 money with her.
Mm-hmm.
So she put her money in the gift box for her friend.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I asked her, where is your money? She says, I don't know. So whatever I asked, I said, I saw it in the morning. So only it's me and you. So where is it? Do you want to think about it? Where did you put it? So she says, no, I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
So this is one of...
Yeah. And you didn't open the box, or did you see that it was actually there?
Yes, when she was asleep, I opened the box, I saw it, and packed it in the morning. So I told her, and I said, okay, I give you a chance to tell me the truth. So I know that you know what happened.
Mm-hmm.
So you tell me the truth.
Yeah. So let's focus on it from another perspective. Why might she have done what she did? What do you think was going on?
Because that's her personality. Whatever she want to do, she does that.
Okay. But she didn't get the makeup, right? So she
uh-huh.
I mean, my what I heard or what I was thinking was she might think what she's giving to her friend isn't enough, so she's adding the money to make up for it, or to, you know, make the gift better.
I don't know exactly what was that. So, but I think that the makeup her friend asked, it was like a $60-$70 exactly.
Mm-hmm.
So, and she was putting the money that she her friend can buy it.
Yeah. Okay. So maybe she told her friend she's going to get it for her, or her friend told her, "I really would like it if you get this
her
for
friend
me."
Ask her.
Yeah. And so it's not to say her lying would be okay or good, but it's also trying to get at, well, what else is going on? And recognizing, like, the lying to you is not personal to you, that, you know, well, you know, because like you're saying, I do all these things for her, she shouldn't lie to me. It's not, I don't think she's lying to you because she doesn't appreciate things you do. There's probably more to it. And usually we're not going to punish or discipline someone to think lying is bad and to want to tell the truth. So I would more encourage you to try to understand what's going on for, make it a conversation. It's tough, I know, so I want to give some of my feedback to you, but I want you to recognize, I know it's not an easy situation, because some of what you described was almost like police and, you know, potential robber having a conversation, like an interrogation, rather than, hey, let's try to figure out what's going on. Like, I know the truth and I'm going to give you a chance to tell the truth. And, you know, and she just said, you know, she said what she said. Maybe she also was afraid to tell you she lied at that point, because, you know, then you're not going to be happy, or you might have a reaction to it. So I could see that there's concerns you have and you want to help her with these things, but probably the disciplining is not the way that's going to help her. More understanding what's going on for her. Even this friend, what made her, you know, did she ask her for this gift specifically? How does she feel if she doesn't get it? You know, even that part of the conversation. Okay, well, what do you feel like if you don't get her the makeup or whatever? And then there could be something there where she says, oh, maybe she won't like me as much, or I don't know what. I'm obviously making up, speculating, but there could be something to understand about her better there than let's teach her that lying, you know, punish her for the lying part of it.
Okay.
So that's just, oh, you know, with the, in general, I would encourage trying to talk to her more, telling her the right things to do might help her less than trying to make sure we understand her. Like, okay, what's happening for her? How does she feel with her friends? You're saying she wants things to be her way, and maybe that's true. But also it could be that she has a lot of anxiety even in her friendships of, do they like me? Do they want to be my friend? It could not be the case, but it could be based on what you've told me about her, that even in her social relationships, there'll be some anxiety that might impact what she does, or, okay, I have to get my friend the gift because maybe they won't feel good, or at least I'll give them the money to get them the gift.
Then what should I do with her? Okay, in general, so do we have act with her so as a normal, or I should always, me and my brother, so we always have to remember that we do tell her situation, but it should be different or should be normal?
Well, I think I get what your question is, that yeah, we don't want to just interact with her every moment as this child who had a difficult childhood, and that's like all we do. And so yeah, we accept anything she's going through or doing or, you know, saying. I mean, we always want to have that awareness of her. That's part of the full picture. She is this girl who's gone through all that, and we don't want to ever lose sight of that. But she's also more than that, because there's resilience, there's strength, and all those things. We don't want to just treat her as the child who went through difficulty. So it's tough. It's a balancing act of, we, as I said, we don't want to have low standards for her or just say, you know, whatever she does, it's okay, because even for herself, we want her to be as strong and good as she can be, so she gets to enjoy that. But yeah, we can't lose sight of what we always want to be aware of, that, like I said, with friends, even, is there abandonment issues or anxiety there about how those relationships are going through? Or with you, she might have that feeling, you know, because of what she's been through. Things feel a lot shakier to her. So it's not surprising that overall she's more anxious, and the biting nails and challenges with sleep. Maybe even, is she uncomfortable being in the dark, being by herself? You know, you said when she reunited with her father, she was much younger then, but she couldn't even, you know, tolerate him going to the bathroom. And that's, you know, this fear of losing that person, that abandonment, or the person disappearing, a severe separation anxiety. So even with the sleep, again, it's not that we say, okay, whatever she wants, we just give it to her, because that's also something we want to be aware of, that if we feed her anxiety always, it actually can make the anxiety worse. So how do we deal with that? There's a really good book related to this topic of dealing with someone with anxiety called Breaking Free of Childhood Anxiety. I would recommend it. Of course, you could read it too, being involved in her life, but also her father. Breaking Free of Child Anxiety and OCD by Eli Lebowitz, Lebowitz. And it's directed towards parents and how to interact with children who have more anxiety or dealing with anxiety issues, because it is tough, because if we always give in to the child's anxiety, we actually could make it worse. But of course, we don't want to just ignore it either, or harshly respond as well. So that's something to consider, you know, in dealing with her. But, you know, she really has been through a lot, you know, what you told me. So we can't forget that, as, you know, in your question, we can't forget that, but we have to see the whole picture. So you have a child, for example, who has to wear glasses. We never lose sight that their vision is something we have to take into account when we're planning things for them. We don't only see them as a child who has glasses and who has, you know, poorer vision than other kids. So it's like, how do we balance seeing the whole picture of who she is?
So what you can do about her grades at school?
Yeah, you know, the grades, my guess is she does care. I mean, I know she shows she doesn't care, but it might be more that she's not sure she can do it. And so if you feel like you can't do something, like you can't achieve at it, even if you care,
No, she knows. She's very smart. Mm-hmm. So first we thought that she has a ADHD or mm-hmm. ADD. We took her to psychologists, and we talked to her teachers. They say, no, she doesn't have ADHD or ADD.
Okay.
So that part is gone. So, and if she pay attention, all the teachers says if she pay attention, she's very good. Mm-hmm. Like she can write the, you know, essay. So in a few minutes, and she write it perfectly, but she doesn't care. Hmm. All the teachers say she doesn't care. When I ask her, so don't you care about your grades? She said, no, I don't.
Hmm.
So, but when I work with her with the math, she gets 100 in 5 minutes.
What happens if you don't help her? She just won't do the work?
You know, she... always teacher says she's the first one giving the finish the test.
Mm-hmm.
Because, as I said, like she's B, C, the grades are B, C. So, because she want to only finish it and that's it, done.
Yeah, I mean, even when I hear that, you know, like, yeah, I mean, being anxious, sometimes you might overcheck everything, but you also might just want to get rid of it because, you know, probably she has a hard time when things don't feel good of knowing how to handle that. Because when we look at what she's been through, there was, first of all, physically she went through so much when no one could be there to help her calm down, probably when she was physically going through so much. But also the emotional experiences that you've described, you know, where could she go when she wasn't feeling good? So likely she held a lot in, and things can get overwhelming for her, possibly easier because she didn't have that great sense of someone comforting her, and then she internalizes this way that things will be okay because things weren't always okay. So I get the sense that her ability to tolerate, you know, not feeling good is really low, even, you know, these things like the lying, it's just a quick reaction to not feeling good, or the, I don't want things to feel bad, so let me just lie to in the moment feel better. So that to me is a bigger overall concern, is helping her get better at tolerating not feeling so good, or that she can calm herself down or deal with how she's feeling. So even in the moment, possibly, yeah, it's very reactive. Okay, studying doesn't feel good. Now, maybe if you study with her, just having you with her and that connection makes it easier, and also she can tolerate it better, but it feels good to be with someone else. Maybe that's impacting things. But I get the sense overall, just holding on to her own feelings, her own emotional experience is very difficult. Even with like sleep, she wants to be next to you or next to someone. It could feel scary. And so even with that, as I was saying with the, you know, other situations, we want to ask her about what does she feel like when she sleeps. So often when we're trying to help someone, we think it's about, even I'm trying to be aware of that when I do this show, giving them the direct advice, do this or do that, but often we get a lot more from asking them, understanding what's going on more. So with the sleep, for example, I want to know, is it, yeah, what is it like? Is it scary for her? Is it the dark? Is it being alone? Does she have nightmares? Does she, you know, is she afraid people won't be there when she wakes up? You know, and we don't have to even give her all these suggestions. We want to give her more space to tell us rather than, you know, tell her. But a lot of those, you know, a lot of those things, maybe more of one of those, more than one of those things is going on for her when she's going to sleep. But even with school, I just get the sense overall, you know, you talked earlier about her attention span. It's more the anxiety and just her sense of not being able to tolerate not feeling good and things that don't feel good. She's hard for her to tolerate, so she just wants to have fun, like you said, enjoy the moment, do that easiest thing in the moment, even the lying. That's the easier thing in the moment. The telling the truth might be tough, so let me just lie. So that's a bigger concern and issue I have that I think would be helpful to help her with, is learning that even things like meditation and helping her learn to calm herself down, that's going to be really critical for her.
So with your recommendation in general for me or her dad, so what we should do?
Yeah, well, that's, you know, that's a of course we've been talking about that at some level this whole time, but in that more general sense, and we are past the commercial break. So let's go to that commercial break, and then we'll conclude after that with some more general thoughts and ideas of what you and him can do to best help your niece.
Thank you so much.
Sure. We'll be right back. Welcome back. Before the break with the caller, let's go back to the now. Caller, are you still there?
Thank you so much. I know I take a lot of your time.
No, not at all.
But in general, if you can give us the guide that how we act with her, what we should do with her.
Well, yeah, I'll give you some general thoughts and some ideas of what to be aware of also with her. So, as I mentioned, she's been through a lot physically and emotionally that we want to be always aware of when we're dealing with her, that things like fears of abandonment, of a rejection, are going to be very strong in her, likely. That's would be, just from what you're telling me, almost inescapable. Especially her mom, every kind of separation is painful. But of course, if a parent dies when a child is young, that's very painful. But there's a different but also very strong pain of a parent who's around but does not come around, or that we don't get to see. And that can be very painful for a child, knowing her mom is close but doesn't see her, doesn't make the time to see her. Maybe she doesn't know. And also, even more, this complication of the mom saying, they're not letting you see me, that, and whatever she's internalized about that, I'm not sure what she has and what's even better. But clearly there's going to be a lot that she's carrying there, or that you said they've tried to meet in public a few times and she didn't show up, and then the thing at the school. So we have to just be aware that this child is carrying a lot of that burden. And the only child part makes it that she had no siblings to share that experience with, or to kind of carry some of that burden with her. So that's just a lot that she's going to be dealing with, and it's always there. So I would want to, to be mindful of that and seeing how she deals with things. As I said, even socially, how she feels. Even you might think, no matter what, I would never, abandon her or leave her side. But she could have anxieties about things like that. And it doesn't mean you necessarily have to bring that up every day or tell her I'm never going anywhere. You can tell her that here and there and share your love for her. But just being aware that that could be something that you might not think it's there, but she might think. If my own mom isn't around, maybe my aunt wouldn't be there if she's very upset with me, or, doesn't. If I do something she doesn't like. So just being aware of those factors. But as far as how to help her, as I said, she's clearly carrying a lot of anxiety, which we can understand. There was so much instability in her experience, and no one there to help her. As I was saying before the break, learn to internalize. Kids learn at a young age from us helping them to that things will be okay, and how to help themselves feel more okay. That if they're feeling bad, it's not a tragedy. It doesn't feel good, but it's going to get better, and that's okay. But I don't think she had that type of experience based on what you have described, where she learned that this is how you deal with things. When things become overwhelming, you can even calm yourself down, or how to even help yourself not get overwhelmed. So as I was saying, things like helping her with breathing and meditation and different ways to help calm and soothe herself will likely be very helpful. Doesn't mean we give her everything she wants. I know you're saying she was very stubborn, and often kids are, but I can get the sense that, as I said, she has a hard time tolerating things not being a certain way because she hasn't had this experience of helping herself calm down. So generally, from your standpoint as the aunt, it seems like you have a great relationship with her, and that's really important. A lot of the healing happens through the relationship, so I can tell you want to help her so much, and that's great. We also don't want to put too much pressure even on you or your interactions with her, that to teach her to act differently or teach her to do something differently from what she's doing, because that can often put more of a strain than help. So I would say maintain your very strong, loving relationship with her. Make yourself a place where she can talk about things. More than thinking about, I have to teach her not to be a certain way or to do a certain type of thing, and having that place where she can come open up to you, or you know, talk to you about things would be really important. An aunt can be great in that way. A person who's not directly a parent can sometimes have that type of a role where they're not as, because they're not involved in the disciplining or that side of things, they can have a different type of interaction with them. For her father, I mean, that's, it's a really tough position. Their relationship had ups and downs, and also periods where he couldn't be there or as involved because of what you described and the different custody and situations that came up and the police and all those things that have happened. So I'm sure their relationship is also filled with these ruptures that have gone about. And so I hope they're focusing on the relationship. I care about her grades, especially I care about her grades because of how it likely makes her feel. I don't think she doesn't care. I know she might say she doesn't, and based on the effort you see from her, it seems like she doesn't care, but I'm sure her getting bad grades doesn't feel good for her. Although you said they're not so bad. You said B's and C's, they're not bad grades. It seems like they can possibly be better, especially you think she's very intelligent. But I would imagine she would like to have better grades, but it's challenging for her too to handle that. So I'm sure she cares. It doesn't mean she's showing strong motivation or effort, but I don't think, I wouldn't assume it means she doesn't care about grades. Now, if you ask someone who's getting bad grades, why are you getting bad grades? They rarely will say, I care so much, I want to do better. If they feel attacked, they'll likely become defensive and say something. Grades, who cares about grades? School is stupid. When am I going to use this stuff? When I get older, you know, a variety of things to show they don't care, but usually they do. I'm sure she would like to get better grades and feel better about how her schoolwork is going. But from what you're describing, it's hard for her, not in the sense of she's not smart enough, but just sustaining the attention and the focus, maybe even on the test, she's getting anxious, so she tries to get through it quickly just to get it over with. As I said, one of the biggest things I'm noticing with what you're describing is just her ability to sit with her feelings and to sit with things not feeling good, and handling that feels overwhelming, or she might get overwhelmed easily, so she's quickly going away from anything that's challenging or doesn't feel good. But of course, that's going to hurt us if at any age, if we live like that, life becomes more difficult. So just some thoughts. I want to give you also a chance to, anything else, questions or thoughts from your side that you'd like to share?
You answered most of my questions. Thank you. So then sometimes I feel that she knows exactly, and she's trying to use me like to get what she wants more than, I know that she likes me, so I know that, but you know how kids are.
Sure.
So is it okay to let her, you know, to to use me to get what she wants?
Well, I guess it depends on what do we mean? Like, what kind of...
Nothing bad.
No, I'm sure. Yeah, I didn't think you were buying anything bad for her. But can you give me... And I know I asked her an example before, so I'll ask you again. Like, give me an example of a way that you feel like she, quote-unquote, used you.
You know, if she wants to buy clothes, she wants to buy something, or she want to go somewhere with her friends. So she... I see that, you know, the way that... nothing specific, but everybody, I don't know exactly, but everybody around me, like my sister, my friend, they say she knows how to use you, so you know that she's using you to
Now is it something her dad wouldn't want her to get or do?
No, not really, but even her dad says like, let's go to buy or something. She doesn't want to go with him. She prefers to go with me, or even he want to buy it. She says, no, I want you to buy it. So she wants me to buy it. So it's like, I don't know is why, but she wanted to do it with me, or most of the things that she wants to buy, she wants me to buy for her.
Well, I mean, I mean, of course, there could be like a female part of that, like some things maybe she prefers going to buy with you or even just spending time with you. But There was one thing you said there, was that even if it's something her dad is going to buy, she'd rather you pay for it? Is that what you mean? Like, sometimes she'd rather you?
No, not to pay.
Okay.
It's not a money issue. So it's like she wants to go with me, and
okay,
she wants me to buy. So, you know, we go together and we buy. That's what.
Yeah. I don't know. And maybe I'm sure there's other things when you're saying she, you know, there might be a using, but that I don't hear a using there. That seems like, as I said, maybe it's her relationship with you. That's great that she wants to go with you, spend time with you. It could be also, you know, going with a woman might feel like something. One, her mom not being in the picture, so wanting that. And as I said, you're still always going to be the aunt, and you can't fill that role as far as be her mom. But there could be a sense of wanting to have that female companionship. So I wouldn't want you not to provide that for her. But I don't hear a using there. That seems like a very sweet, I'd rather go with my aunt than my dad, you know, kind of a thing, which could be really nice. And I'm glad that shows she has that relationship with you. So yeah, for me, I didn't hear a using in there. You know, I thought you meant more like
her.
What's that?
I said maybe I spoil her, so that's why. Like, probably that's not very important. So, and if, even if she does, I think it's okay. So, I shouldn't even mention it. Yeah, I don't care what other people think. So.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I wouldn't want you to, let's say, do things her dad doesn't want her to do or to buy or something like that. That's important to, you know, even you're talking about honesty. We want to show her we're being honest. So if, you know, her dad says you can't do this and then you sneak and have her do it, that could be, we're showing that, you know, there's some dishonesty can be good, or that we're doing it ourselves. But her saying, you know, her dad's like, okay, I'll go buy you some shoes. And she's like, no, I'd rather go with my aunt. That's so sweet. You know, and as I said, it could be multiple factors of the female thing, the, you know, just wanting to spend time with you. And maybe, I don't know, how does she feel when she goes with her dad doing things? You know, there's different elements. But to me, nothing there concerns me, again, as, especially since you said it wasn't, you know, her dad says no, then she comes to you and you say yes. That I would be more concerned about. But what you're describing there seems quite nice. I'm glad she has that relationship.
Usually I communicate with her dad, and we are in the same page.
Great.
You know, is he gave me a lot of, like, make decisions, so he's okay.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not like that if I say something, he doesn't say it against me, or I don't say anything against him. So
that's great.
You know,
yeah.
That part we communicate good. So.
So yeah, to me then, that's really, I was saying, of course you're going to be her aunt, but her not having her mom, the desire for female companionship might be more. So we're there for her. We knowing we won't replace that void, but you know, she might, especially as she gets older and, you know, going through womanly types of things, she'll need people in her life that are females that can help her, that her dad probably can't be the person she goes to talk about these things and to help her figure that out. So I think it's so good she has a close female family companions like you and her other aunts, hopefully. But it seems like she has a great bond with you. And as I said, that relationship will probably do a lot of the helping that you can do, more than focusing on, I have to teach her to care about this, or, you know, to stop doing something. I would, you know, focus more on the relationship and helping, you know, talk to her about those things more than thinking I have to use some kind of discipline to change what she's doing. Because likely we want to understand where it's coming from, rather than, you know, if we get her to see that it's wrong, she'll stop. I think she cares about her grades more than she's leading on. And I don't think she likes lying, but I think she's afraid to tell the truth, or afraid of, you know, that situation. Okay, but what if my friend is not happy, or, you know, this, and that she just didn't know what to deal with it and just went to that place. So we're going to have to show her over time that it's okay to tell us the truth, and how do we deal with those things. But I think your relationship with her can be very beneficial, and I hope you'll, focus on that part, that just being in close relationship with her, loving her, communicating with her is going to be a huge help, and not to focus too much on, I have to change certain behaviors in her.
Last question.
Sure.
So she doesn't, as I said, she doesn't talk to anyone. So when her mom go to school, so I tried to talk to her, and she said she doesn't want to talk.
Yeah.
I never talked to her, but I was wondering, is it good to talk about her mom or no?
Well, so
nothing. Not that I want to say something bad.
Yes,
only
that's
I want to
good.
Say that it's okay that you miss. So mm-hmm. you can tell me, but she doesn't want to say anything.
Yeah, it's, I mean, look, it's probably super, super sore, sensitive subject for her, and it's all very complicated, too, because of mom saying negative things about you guys and the family and, you know, what's happened. Overall, is it good for her to talk to her mom? Yes, but the important but there is that she has to feel comfortable and good about the talking. And that's so we have to be aware, going back to what I was saying, we're not going to force it from in her to, well, you know, it's good for you to talk about your mom, so we have to talk about your mom. But to show that you're open to it and, you know, very gently just say, I can understand it's not easy to talk about her, but I want you to know I'm always here if you ever want to just say anything or to talk about, let's say. And not do that often, because then it becomes, you know, difficult. So you're kind of letting her know and making it very clear and just leaving it at that, not even saying like, well, do you miss her or do you think this, or, you know, asking, even I said like it could be this and that, but we don't want to even intrude in that way, because it seems like it's like such a sore wound that just barely touching it hurts. And so we have to make sure she's the one that says, okay, maybe I want to talk to you about it. And if she does, yeah, we keep it very, you know, what she wants and brief and to the point. And we let her talk more than we talk, for sure. But yeah, I think it can be good, but we can never force someone to talk about something they're not ready to talk about. You know, I'm a therapist, people come to therapy and might be like, okay, this seems like an important thing to talk about, but if I can see the person doesn't want to talk about it, I'm not going to ever force them, say, no, you have to talk about, you know, this thing, because that itself violates their space. And so we want to make sure we're showing her we're there. We love her. She can talk to us about anything, anytime, but we would never force her or pressure her that you have to talk to me about this thing.
So can you give me one short? So if you want to talk,
mm-hmm.
what should I say?
Well, that's, again, so you want to talk. We have to make sure she wants to talk. If she doesn't want to talk.
When she want to talk.
Sure. So she wants to talk. So a few things I would say is definitely less is more, in the sense that, especially, let's say, if she's telling you about her mom. Now, of course, I can get that you probably have so much you maybe want to tell her. You want to show her love related to that topic, so you might want to say a lot. But I would say make sure you keep it as brief as she wants it to be. If she wants to keep talking, keep talking. But let the conversation be brief, if that's all she can handle. Don't say too much. Make sure you're letting her say more. Keep it very low key, so you're not adding stress to the conversation or putting more pressure on her. Show her your understanding about, so you know what, if she's like, yeah, sometimes I'm this, sometimes I'm that, and even if you disagree, or she says, oh yeah, like my mom said, you guys took me away, you know, and like, don't feel like you have to dispute the facts or get her to change her mind. Just, you know, you're creating a space for her that we want her to, you know, that's it's part of the discussion. It's not gonna be the only conversation. So we let her feel that this is not a scary thing to do, so we can go there again, you know? So she brings up, oh yeah, like my mom, sometimes I miss her so much. You know, maybe it's something that you're like, oh, well, she's the one creating these problems, or, you know, whatever your thoughts are about it. It's like, I can get that, yeah. You know, just very brief. How do you feel? And even that, I would be gentle, like going too much into it, where if she doesn't want to go, and just leave it at that, you know? So less is going to be more with those things, because of how sensitive and delicate it is, if you're saying she almost never brings it up. So if she does, we want to, of course, not lose the moment, but not extend the moment too much where she might get overwhelmed and be like, okay, I don't want to do that again.
If she sometimes says, I'd like to stay with you, so if I can, I'm working full time, so only I can have her weekends, but I was thinking, you know, if I can have her more than weekends, so is it okay?
It's okay. I mean, I wouldn't want it to be too much the habit of, you know, we want her home to be her home. This is so nice to have this place to come and spend some time. And I know you want to give her more. But, you know, we want her to feel good at her home. Even maybe you can go over there more, too. I think it's nice for you and her to have this time. But, you know, I think making it where she has two homes, might not be better than making sure she has one home where she really feels good, and that's her home. And then she also has this place where she comes and spends some time with her aunt that she likes so much and has a good time. But I don't know if that's necessarily the way you have to do more for her.
Okay. Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
My pleasure. Nice talking to you. All the best to you and your family.
Thank you.
All right. Take care. Okay, let's go to another commercial break. We'll be right back. Welcome back. Let's go to another caller. Radio Hamra, you're on the air.
Am I on?
Hi, thanks for calling.
Hey, doctor. How you doing? Thanks for taking my call.
My pleasure.
So we have teenager, 17, junior high school, and we just want to make sure that we are handling some of his brand new behavior correctly. And sometimes I'm not sure if I'm using the stick or the carrot or which one I should use. You know, so he is at the point where he's just pushing boundaries and tries new things, and we don't know if he should. How strict we should be, or and then on the flip side, you know, he tells us that you should get out of my life. You know, I'm grown, and you know, I want to make my own decisions. So,
okay,
just wanted to get your thoughts on.
Sure. So on the surface, of course, these are challenges that we usually face in adolescence of new behaviors. We expect some new behaviors, but I'm sure some of what you're saying is behaviors that are you don't like or are concerned about. And then also this battle of how much space to give him versus how much structure and all those things. Are there other kids in the home?
No, he's the only one.
Only one. Okay. So tell me some of these like new behaviors you mentioned. What are you noticing?
Yeah, so he's very sociable. You go around the neighborhood, you go to school, his friends, everybody like loves the guy, and he's very communicative, very conversational. But then lately, he has been neglecting a couple of the friends that he practically grew up with ever since the elementary school. And we know the parents. We think they're great kids, great people. And then he's been hanging out with one or two specific kids that we're not too crazy about. I mean, they're not bad kids. And now we have this brand new dilemma in the conversation, and that's marijuana. Mm-hmm. And I never smoke marijuana. I don't do it now. And to me, that in our household culture, you know, we kind of try to tell them that we have a zero tolerance. But on the flip side, I know that's kind of a challenging thing in the society. Mm-hmm. Because every kid tries it in high school. I'm like, okay, you're not every kid. I really don't care about the other kids.
Yeah.
But then you go to every corner of the town, now there's like cannabis stores everywhere. Sure. So it's kind of a hard conversation to convey to the kid when this is becoming more mainstream. But I try to tell him that, you know, at 17, I think this is kind of early to have these conversations. That you say, it's okay for me, and I don't do it often. And then he's been into surfing lately. We live close to the ocean. I know that, you know, the culture of surfing is always synonymous with smoking marijuana. So that to me is worrisome. So I hope that he's smart enough to know his limits. Even though he tries it once in a blue moon, I shouldn't have any problem with that. I just don't want him to be surrounded with kids that push it on him too much, that he's just going to get, it's going to become a habit.
Sure.
You know? And then for a while, all these little events have been affecting his grades. We were worried about that. In the second semester in junior, he kind of got it together. He's improved his grades. They're not excellent, but they're a lot better. And this is this second semester of 11th grade, as we were told by counselors, school, all friends, is a pivotal moment, because when you go to college, they look at the second semester of 11th grade. And the 12th grade event, to my surprise, is less important than now. So we try to convey that message. So all that thing together, and that he is just not, it's horrible, horrible with time management. He's always late to school, you know, he gets like late cars, and we, unfortunately we can view it on the app from school, and it, you know, it's just a matter of like 2-3 minutes. And a lot of it I know because he spends like 25-30 minutes in the shower. So I don't know if I should just say, hey, it's a phase, you know, maybe it's me, I need to chill and let the kid grow up, and I know he's going to be a contributing member to the society at this point, but right now I'm facing this challenge. It's just kind of confused on a daily basis, like how to best handle these.
It's tough, you know, you said yourself that balancing the carrot and the stick, or what's most helpful for him. It was funny the way you said maybe I need to chill almost sounded like you were thinking you should smoke the marijuana that might make maybe that'll solve all the problems, but
probably.
You know, and you mentioned, you know, what you shared is it's a tough thing with you know, when we talk about our kids turning into adolescents, one of the hardest parts for parents is the things that they now might get into are scarier. You know, if you're 8-year-old, okay, maybe they're playing a bit of a video game too much, but once they enter adolescence, you know, drugs and alcohol become something, sexual and romantic relationships become potentially part of the picture, and it's a lot scarier for parents too, because of the things that they're getting involved with can be scarier for us to think about. But the marijuana also, it's tough because I could understand, it's not that I would encourage anyone or any kid to use marijuana, but we also know that to stop him is probably not possible. You know, I've worked with many families that go to, you know, they resort to drug testing and, you know, all these things, and it basically creates like a police state in their own home, and you know, just doesn't work. So if we make that the biggest issue, usually we can't control it to begin with, and it just ruins the relationship. But it's hard to know how to deal with that, because obviously you care and you're concerned, and you know, they're overall marijuana, it's not maybe as bad as sometimes people would say, but it's definitely not harmless either. So it's not something we just want our kids to be exposed to, because when they're younger, also it can affect the brains and ways that it doesn't when you're older, on top of even, you know, still having effects as we get older. So I could get these, you know, you're trying to figure out how to deal with him. One of the more important things, you know, it's such a common thing I discuss with parents. It came up with the previous caller with her niece, but the relationship is really critical. Now, it doesn't mean we never do something the person doesn't like. That's not building a good relationship. But more than if we focus on, okay, how do I get him to stop smoking weed, or convince him that, let's say, marijuana is not good. And I've, you know, dealt with hundreds of these types of conversations. The parent sends 3 articles where it shows marijuana is bad for you. The kid sends 3 back that say marijuana is good for you in some way, and they don't really get anywhere, because they're just, you're just going to see it differently from him no matter what. You know, we're not going to find a way of convincing him that to change his mind. So I can understand this concern of how to interact with him. You know, with the time management part, it's not that we don't look at it or, you know, pay attention to it, but I guess we're getting the feeling as he gets older, which is the reality that we can't control as much as we, you know, even before we couldn't really control, but our influence becomes less. So we could try to help support him or see what's going on, but, you know, it seems like he's in a, you said, yeah, is it a phase, or what does that mean, where he's not really as focused on school, or now he's trying to get it together. Even that, tell me what's changed. You feel like he's more motivated now in this second semester?
Just a tad, and that doesn't say much, because it was extremely off the grid the first semester. Maybe he put it together a little bit, and that was as a result of, you know, us getting a few sessions of counseling with a life coach or a psychiatrist, and also with a counselor at school. We had numerous conversations with him. I don't know if we give him too much freedom, not enough, or too strict, because, you know, I feel like sometimes with one child, we put our eggs in one basket.
Just
have him under the lens, like, you know, constantly. But then if we let him loose, I feel like he's making all these, you know, chain of mistakes. You know, he's late, and, you know, he doesn't do his homework on time, and He goes, hangs out with his friends all weekend long. I mean, again, he's a great kid, but I wish that there was a way for me to motivate him to get a little bit more responsible. He's looking for a job because his car requires a lot of money for gas. And I told him, you know, he should start thinking to pay for his own gas. So he wants a weekend job. So
yeah.
I don't know if we should go that route and just have him focus on just being a kid or...
I'm okay, you know, just to quickly address that one. I know people have different opinions on that. I'm okay with kids, teenagers getting a job and working and, you know, something they're okay, especially if they're wanting it, to give them some of that experience of seeing what work is like, making money, seeing, you know, it gives them some sense of value of money. So, yeah, I think it's not that he'll have enough time if he gets a part-time job to focus on school also. So just addressing that last part. But, you know, his focus, another thing that happens a lot is the kids' focus becomes much more on their peers. One, it goes away from their parents towards their peers, but overall. So what they do with their friends and how their friends see them become even more important than they are. And we all care about those things, but they become even more important all of a sudden in adolescence. So it seems like you're seeing some of that too, where you feel like he's so focused on that and what he's doing with them and spending time. And I think what you're seeing, like you said, he's a good kid, but you feel like he's a bit out of balance right now, or at least what you see.
He's a bit out of balance.
Yeah, and that's what you're concerned about. And I think likely he'll find his way back to that, or we have to help him find or trust that he will. I'm looking at the time. We're a bit over the commercial break, and we're going to have the last segment.
Sure.
So let's go to commercial break. We'll have maybe, I think, 10, 12 minutes or so. We could explore a bit more what's going on, and I'll share some more thoughts with you before we have to wrap up. How does that sound? All right. Let's go to the last commercial break. We'll be right back. Welcome back. Before the break, we're with a caller. Let's go back to them now. Caller, are you still there?
I'm still here.
Oh, okay. You know, during the break, I remembered you'd mentioned a few sessions of counseling, life coach, psychiatrist, something like that. And a few questions about that. One is, did your son want those things? And then two, if you can tell me a bit more about who he did see, and then if he saw a psychiatrist, they gave any diagnosis or anything like that.
I always get the psychiatrist and psychologist mixed up. Yeah, that's just probably a psychologist.
So yeah, psychiatrist can prescribe and psychologist cannot. Okay, so he saw a psychologist, but more as a life coach type of a...
Yes.
Okay. And he wanted that himself?
Younger gentleman, and he kind of clicked with him because he actually... went to the same high school as my as the current high school my son goes to.
Nice. Okay, and then your son wanted those sessions though himself?
Yeah, he was open to the idea, and then he had a couple of sessions, and they said, yeah, I mean, he's good. He only had 4 sessions so far, so I think he should do it a little bit more often. But we don't have to twist his arm. I mean, he goes, so.
All right.
It's a third person that he can, you know, kind of lay out, and, you know, he can speak in his mind, and, you know, it was our suggestion, but he was open to it.
Okay. Yeah, I just wanted to see about that. So it seems like that's been at least partially helpful, and he's liked it. That's good. You know, I've worked with lots of families of teenagers, and if the kid doesn't want to come to therapy, I never want them to come in, because it just doesn't. It's just like you can drop someone off at the gym, but if they don't want to work out, it doesn't matter if you drop them off there. They gotta have to want that, and that actually also is relevant to what you're feeling about motivation. You know, we can't force motivation upon someone else. It has to come from them, especially as they're, you know, getting older. The incentives will be much more internalized. That we need that to be where it's coming from. So I think you're worried that he's losing track of things that you think matter, should matter more, and going more towards these things that you don't think are going to be as good for him long term, especially, you know, we talked about the balance is what you're worried about.
Well, I know we are constrained with time, so a couple of bullet points there. I feel like I have a great relationship with him, and I always tell him that I hate micromanaging you because I don't have the energy nor the time.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, sometimes I feel like I have to. So, and then I also try to tell him that the more responsibility and independence I see from you, the more I feel like I can rely on you and give you more privileges. So it's a two-way street.
Mm-hmm.
And in principle, he agrees with everything, But then the next day is back to normal, back to like, okay, it's as if like I was talking to a wall. Mm-hmm. I know this is typical for the age.
Sure.
But at the same time, I see some of his peers and some of his friends that are good friends with him, and they are a lot more responsible. They hold a part-time job and they get good grades, and then, you know, so that kind of disappoints me. Like, I go to the gym and I see his buddies at the gym. I'm like, why don't you go to the gym? Oh, I will tomorrow. And I pay for the membership. He hasn't been to the gym. He goes there like at an average once a month or twice a month. Mm-hmm. He is active. He likes to go surfing, but it's just all over the map. There's no like, there's no program. Like today, he just took off with his friends and they went to their local beach to go running. So that's awesome. It's mm-hmm. great, but it's just, it's not consistent. It's just, I'm going to do this, and one day I'm going to do that, and you know, I'm going to get a good grade. I mean, principally, he agrees to everything I'm saying, but it's just his time management. You know, he doesn't have like a goal. Like, okay,
yeah,
You know, again, great kid, great intentions. You know, his mom. I should also say that moms are moms, so dads are a little bit like, you know, standoffish, you know, let him hurt himself, let him learn or whatever. But mom is worried, you know, as a result, or maybe not as a result, sometimes he doesn't tell us the truth.
Hmm.
So he bends the truth or he lies or he hides things. I mean, you know, we caught him on a few occasions where he didn't tell us the truth. So he went upstairs to late night, you know, playing video games with his buddies, or I don't know what else he does in the room. My wife thinks that he uses marijuana once in a blue moon. So the door had a lock from inside, so we used to lock the door, and we told him don't lock the door, and we started worrying about that. So yesterday when he wasn't home, I went and changed the lock. And when he came home, he went ballistic.
Yeah.
And, oh, you guys are crazy. What kind of parenting is this and that? And I just said, hey, you go talk to him. So she went upstairs and talked to him, yelling, screaming, all that. So he finally came down downstairs, apologized, gave me a hug. But he's still PO'd about the lock.
Yeah.
Change. And I told him, well, you got to earn your privileges, you know.
Well, I agree with earning or privileges can be, you know, there's consequences. It's different than necessarily even punishment. There can be consequences, but I would say a lock on the door is more maybe like standard. You know, it's something that he should be able to have that privacy. You know, so privacy shouldn't have to be earned. It should just be you have privacy.
So you think it's a good idea for him to have a lock?
I think it's okay, you know. Yeah, I think it's just giving him that space, because again, the idea behind it sounds like, okay, well, if he doesn't have a lock, then we might be controlling him better. He might not do things we don't want him to do, and he'll find a way to do it. Okay, yeah, he still might do it even if you're home, or he'll wait till you're not home or leave the house and do it, let's say if it's marijuana or something. So we have to look at our intention too, which I can get it. There's a sense of, okay, well, what might he do if he you know, we don't have access to him, or he can escape us, but he's going to be away from you in so many ways. And it's one of those things that usually you won't control what he's doing. You'll just, as I mentioned before, damage the relationship with him more than anything.
I get it.
So that's my thought with that one is, you know, just having conversation.
One last thing is, sure. If I may.
Of course.
Just in respect to what you just said about maybe that's going to backfire in terms of losing his trust even further. So my wife talked to me about the marijuana users. So we bought these test kits. We haven't used it, but we also always are what's the word, threatening him that we might do some random testing, and he doesn't like that.
No, and I get it. Again, so your concerns are understandable. Nothing, you know, you're saying doesn't make sense. It's just what's the likely consequence, you know? So, as I said, making it into this almost like a police state where it's like, you know, we can drug test you, we could do these things, and then what's going to happen if first of all, I think it's bad to begin with, but even if he does, you know, test positive, what's going to be the consequence? So I think at the end of the day, the painful truth is that accepting that we can't control our kids doesn't mean we don't you know, any, everything goes, going back to this carrot or the stick or structure. So there can be boundaries and things that we set up, but realizing there's a lot of things that if we try to control, we likely won't be able to, and just as I said, we'll damage the relationship more than anything. So I usually strongly discourage this. Now, a child might say, look, I'm trying to get clean. Help me by doing this. That's a very different thing than we're going to drug test you. And you know,
I honestly don't even know how much the usage is. It might not even be significant.
Yeah,
as he's telling me.
And
but
right.
There are suspicions whether or not he's telling us the truth. But I don't know. I have no proof of saying that he does use it regularly.
Yeah, and we don't know. And even if he told you, it's likely, you know, double whatever he tells you, more than likely. But still, you know, trying to get to the bottom of that, probably we won't get there. You know, so I as I said, do I want him to smoke marijuana? No, but I also get that if we try to control it, we were not going to, and he's just going to hide things more, be more angry with us, and you know, those kinds of things. So it might just be a waste of the energy and damaging the relationship more. It's very hard to accept some of those parts of it. But as I said, doesn't mean anything goes. So if he says, I want you to buy a bunch of marijuana for me or do this, or I'm going to spend money in this way, you don't have to just say yes to anything he wants. But the recognizing that control probably won't get us to even the result that we want, or it's not going to help him. You know, even if we control him to stop smoking marijuana, okay, once he's away from you, he'll do it again or feel like he's, you know, he didn't get that experience out of his system, you know. So, I would say give him some more space. It seems like you've noticed a change in him. I'm sure he has too, and maybe even some of it he likes, some of it he might be concerned about. And the more we can create a space for him to talk to you about it, you said your relationship was pretty good, that, you know, even if you share, these are my concerns. Sometimes I get worried about this. Now he might say, oh, Dad, you worry too much. You and Mom are too worried. He probably will have that feeling. Most teenagers do, and maybe even you do worry too much. But, you know, trying to show him the things that you're concerned on, like have him help you understand what's going on. Like, you know, the school stuff, what's happening, you know. The grades matter, and 11th grade is very much built up as this pivotal year. I understand, but you know, we can't get him to get good grades. You know, that's not going to be something that we can make it happen. So we do have to trust him, as scary as that can be, and focus on that relationship part of things more than, you know, the punishing is probably not going to get us somewhere anyway. And as far as the restrictions of the lock and the drug testing, both of them I would kind of oppose. I'm looking at the time. Okay. I actually didn't realize we are at the end of the time. We could explore some things more, see how things are going with them. If you'd ever like call back, we can continue the conversation. Are you still there?
Do I have a minute?
Maybe 10 seconds, 20 seconds. Sorry.
Just real quick.
Sure.
No, this is all great. I appreciate it. Good feedback. He also said on numerous occasions that he's got anxiety. And
okay.
I told him, well, I appreciate what you're saying. Everybody has anxiety. Anybody without anxiety,
yeah, it's,
must be,
yeah,
a person, but there are
people. Now, I don't know if
medication.
He's...
Should I give him medication?
Well, no. I mean, I would say, okay, and I don't know if he's saying that to say that's why I smoke marijuana, but I would always take those things seriously, as in you could talk to him about it, but... And, you know, and even if he does have anxiety, medication is definitely not the first place we would go to. Therapy, and there's other things, you know. But even what is, you know, anxiety is a lot of different things. So that's a big question. I would take it seriously in the sense that have a conversation, but I wouldn't knee-jerk give him something in response to that. Yeah. Again, we do have to...
I told him, you know, it could be lack of time management. You know,
and you don't have to even solve it for him, but just, you know, say, okay, well, if you do have anxiety, let's go talk to a professional about that, you know. Let's go into it, rather than just react to it. But yeah, I hope maybe we'll have another chance to talk, but I appreciate you calling.
I hope so too. I appreciate your time. Thank
My
you
pleasure.
So much.
Sure, take care. All right, that brings us to the end of today's show. Big thank you to Farhuda here in the studio. You've been listening to In Session with Dr. Fadi Dolakwi. Zan Zendegi Azadi.